Good morning. This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. I'm Vanessa Lowry and your host for today's show. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book they've written, are in the process of writing, or intend to write someday. We'll miss having permanent host Tim Morrison with us in the studio today, but I'm thrilled to be here once a month and step into his hosting shoes. Our regular co-host, Stone Payton, is with me today. He's a vital cog in both our show and Business Radio X. Good morning, Stone.
Well, good morning, sunshine. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day outside, and we've got some really cool guests in the show with us today.
Yeah.
So we often talk to people after their books are written, but today our topic is about how a writing critique group might be helpful while you're in the process of writing. We have Brenda Ledford, Saul Adler, and Todd Campbell with us today. We're going to talk about how their writing critique group creates a supportive environment for one another and their fourth member, Sue Stupfen. I believe I'm saying that correct.
Stupfen.
We're sorry that Sue couldn't be with us today, but we're excited to have the three of you with us. We're going to do things a little bit differently today. I'm going to introduce each one of our guests and have them tell us a little bit about what they're currently working on. And then we're going to have a roundtable discussion for most of the show. So usually we save that to the end, but today we're going to do that through most of the show. First of all, I'm going to introduce Brenda. I'm thrilled to have my client Brenda Ledford with us today. Brenda, writing under the pseudonym of Lorraine Tate, earned a degree in English literature from Kennesaw State University. She's been writing short stories and historical fiction since the early 90s. Two novels, Going Home and Love Among Enemies, have been published. And the third book of this American Civil War trilogy, Blood in the Coosa, is scheduled for publication next year. Brenda and I met several years ago through the Georgia Writers Association, and then I designed the cover and formatted the interior of her second novel, Love Among Enemies. Welcome, Brenda.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
That's cool. So I'd love for you to tell our listeners a little bit about these three novels and how they tie together, and I can't wait to hear what's happening with Faith and Jonathan.
Well, I'm working now on that third book, Blood in the Coosa, and it is a continuation of the Civil War story. The first book starts in modern day time with a story of a family in crisis. That was Going Home, the book Going Home. And I wanted to connect it to a story in the Civil War and lead into my trilogy from modern day time back into the trilogy. So the second story is a continuation of the Civil War story that started in Going Home. And that story, Love Among Enemies, was the story of the two that fell in love, Faith and Jonathan, captain in the Union Army, and Faith, a Confederate girl, and their love story and how they found each other during the Reconstruction period of the Civil War. The third book is a continuation of their rise out of the ashes, if you want to use an old cliche, and how their family succeeds. So I'm working on that now, and hopefully we'll have that out next summer.
And those books take place kind of a combination of Georgia and Alabama,
Rome, Georgia, and Winston County, Alabama, which is in the northern part, which was split between Union and Confederate, and there were just lots of atrocities going on in that county because of neighbor against neighbor and father against father. So it was a great, as you said a minute ago, it was great emotional fodder for a book. I could probably write 10 on that subject alone.
Well, and I know that there's a lot of history of Rome, Georgia that you included both at the end of Love Among Enemies and then that you're talking about in Blood in the Coosa as well.
Blood in the Coosa is set in Rome, Georgia. So it's a story about the building of a railroad and the coming out of the ashes for this family and their ability to live together, both Union and Confederate, under the horrors of really the Reconstruction period after the war.
So good lessons for all of us about how to live together with people that have different opinions on things.
Right, even a husband and wife, right?
That's right, exactly. Well, Brenda, we're going to talk some more about your books, but I'm going to introduce Saul, and then I'm going to introduce Todd, and then we'll open up the microphone. So today we have Saul Adler with us. He is a physician and a writer living in the Atlanta area. He's published 4 short stories, and he's completed 2 novels. He's currently working on a nonfiction book titled Medical Manners, Better Health Through Improved Civility in the Doctor's Office and the Hospital. Welcome, Saul.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So can you tell us a little bit about your nonfiction book that you're working on and who the target reader of that's going to be?
It's a book that I'm collaborating on with Dr. Barry Silverman. It was his idea And he's lectured fairly extensively on how civility in the medical profession has changed remarkably over the last 30 or 40 years. We've both been in practice for that period of time, and we've seen this change, and we're kind of saddened by it. And it's not just a matter of being nice or being pleasant to your patients, or it's a matter of improving the patient's health. There's a lot that goes into a medical exam, and one of the important things in order to get a patient to speak freely and to, in effect, to trust the doctor, and when the doctor makes recommendations, the patient has to follow them. Without trust, there is no follow. So we are trying to emphasize how important it is for the doctor and the patient to establish that trust, and that trust is established through respect, and when exhibits respect for the patient by acting in a civil, well-mannered manner. And the book is directed not at the doctor. One would think, well, you know, let's write this book for the doctors. We didn't think that it would be well received by the medical community.
Imagine that.
On the other hand, we are directing it at the patient, and doctors like to read, like to know what their patients are reading, especially if it impacts them directly. So we've written the book with the patient in mind, and with the idea that this is what you should look for in your doctor's behavior to identify that doctor that you will be able to have a good relationship with and that will be effective in your in delivering your medical care. And we've also included in the book ways that if you confront bad manners or incivility in the hospital or in the doctor's office, ways that you can deal with that in a positive way. One of our models is Judith Martin, who, as you probably know, is the Miss Manners in the newspaper columns.
Right.
And she makes the point that, you know, when confronted by bad manners, it is equally bad manners to point that out to the individual. And, you know, we make that point in the book that you don't, you know, if somebody's rude to you, then you don't confront them with it in the hospital or in the doctor's office. But there are ways of dealing with it that might act as a positive example to the medical professionals. So we're having a lot of fun with the book, and we're very excited about it.
So it sounds like it's really just about opening up communication between the doctor and the patient, so that the patient has more tools to be able to communicate with the doctor and know what each of them is trying to get across.
Communication and trust. You're never more vulnerable than when you're in pain, and you go into the doctor's office and you strip down, you know, and you allow the doctor to poke and prod where you're feeling the worst. You need to trust the fellow or the woman who's doing that. And
right.
If there's no trust, then there's not going to be an effective medical exam.
So do you find it really different to write this nonfiction book than the fiction?
Oh, yes, very different. Fiction is a lot more fun. You create universes. You create people out of the blue, and then you want them dead. They're dead.
And you don't have to be nice about it.
Oh, no.
Well, that's great. Well, Saul, we're going to talk some more about your writing, too. So now I'm going to introduce Todd, the third member of your writing group, and... Todd Campbell has been teaching English since 1997, focusing on writing instruction since 2001. He's been published in The Peacock's Feet. I love the name of that. Mm-hmm. The Peacock's Feet, the literary magazine for Georgia College and State University, and in a collection of short stories for the Dahlonega Literary Festival. Todd, can you tell us what you're working on right now? What kind of things are you working on?
My current project is basically a novel that I started 2 years ago for National Novel Writing Month, which actually today's the first day of that.
Oh, that's right.
Yes. But it's basically the story of a woman on the verge of her 30th birthday, and she has literally no idea who or what she's supposed to be. She has no goals for her life. She's basically a doormat for everyone around her. She's willing to take on any task. She's just, hi, how are you doing today? And that kind of personality. But essentially, she's reached a threshold where she has to decide at some point what and who she's going to be. And so she has a series of, I guess, somewhat fantastical experiences to kind of decide exactly what her future is going to be like, and that's basically the entire story.
So did you find that difficult to write this novel from a female perspective?
Somewhat, yes, but luckily I've based the character a good bit on my wife, though any similarities are purely coincidental.
any negative references are...
Exactly.
But everything good is just like her.
Right. But and no offense to the women present and the women listening, but to an extent, we're all human beings and we all have the same kind of needs. And what I discovered as I was writing this is, even though I thought I was writing it for her, in truth, I ended up finding a lot of self-discovery in it too. What do I want? Not necessarily what I want from my life, but what is it that I want to accomplish? What do I need to do? Who am I ultimately? And so there's a lot of myself in the character. And again, just I've written some stories in the past that were from a female perspective, and I think, knock on wood, though I won't just in case, but I think that I kind of captured a little bit of the female perspective and psyche to an extent, but you're all so very wonderfully complicated.
He's running for office.
He is.
Actually, no. But so it was difficult, of course, but it was also an interesting stretch because when I write for a specific character, I try to put myself in that person's perspective, almost like a method actor would do.
So I think it's interesting that you started this novel during National Novel Writing Month. So how did that work for you? I mean, did you feel like you got through your first draft when you did that before? Or
For the most part, I did. But again, the way that National Novel Writing Month is just putting stuff on the page, just purging the ideas. You don't worry about it. Self-editing. You just... it's almost like a brainstorming activity. Throw everything out there as much as you can. And so it was interesting because when I actually presented it to the group, they twice, the opening, they said, you need to cut this, this, and this because it's no good. And so I thought, well, okay, I'll do it. I'll just get right to the story.
We
and
say
the introduction.
Very nicely, though.
Okay. Yes, sure you do. Yes.
With manners.
That's right.
Proper etiquette. But it was interesting just to get as much of the story out as I possibly could. And then when that National Novel Writing Month ended, I just continued to push on with it because I really liked the ideas of the story. I had strong images. In the middle section of the story, I basically have it set up with a three-act structure where in the first act, we see exactly what her life is like. In the middle section, she gets to take on different identities and roles that are sort of, to one extent or another, iconic for women. And I've got to add actually a few more that I haven't presented to the group yet, but I want to have her take on a Lilith persona, and I want her to take on a Virgin Mary persona. That way she takes on that dynamic right there, almost the bipolar aspect of Lilith versus the Virgin Mary and just all the other parts of being a woman. So she tries on these different personalities, different identities. Some are literary in nature, some are strictly movie related. Actually, I have her in the most recent version of it. She plays Bridget O'Shaughnessy from Maltese Falcon.
Okay.
And it's definitely her personality, but she gets to try on what it's like to be a femme fatale in this particular story. So it's just been a lot of fun to get the story told and get it out there. And now I think I'm 15 pages from being finished with this edition of it.
That's cool. So 15 pages. Wow.
Well, hopefully it'll be 15 pages.
Yeah.
I write briefly, so we'll see.
Well, I'm so excited to have all of you here. When Brenda and I were working together on her book, she had such wonderful things to say about the support that she got from you all as a writing group and how much that helped her develop her characters. And so I've really been interested in having this conversation, and it's so cool that you could all be here with us today. So I'm curious, I want all of us to just have an interaction, but curious how you all met and how you decided to come together as a writing group. Brenda, you want to?
Well, I'll let Saul do that. He is the head of our group. So,
well, there is no head, but I'm more than happy to tell you about the story about how we got together. We all enrolled in the KSU writing program and took a course in Tony Groom's. It was a short story writing course. And we kind of, knew each other. We didn't get real social, but there were about 14 or 15 in the class.
Yeah.
And it was, for the most part, everybody in the class was respectful and very supportive. But I think that the few people that came to the first meeting of our writers group, and there were several others besides us, were the ones who were most interested in having an interchange of ideas. So it was self-selective at first. And then it winnowed down to five of us. And then Rick Thompson was the fifth member, and then he had to drop out for a number of reasons. So there were just the four of us. And in addition to Tony's class, you guys may not remember, but there was another class that we had about collaborative writing. And the book that really impressed me the most was this book by Judy Reeves called Writing Alone, Writing Together. And it's a how-to book in a way, but it's also a very clear exposition of why a writing group is helpful towards to the creative process. And I was very impressed by the book. And when we got together, we kind of adopted the ideas, some of them that are in the book, and we went forward from there. And it's been it's been very helpful for me, and I believe it's been helpful for everybody in the group.
So did the instructors at Kennesaw encourage their students to become part of a writing group? Was that part of the class, or did you all just do this on your own?
We did it on our own.
Yeah. I'd gone to actually Tony Groom's because I had the same short story class with Saul. And at the end of the semester, I walked up to Tony and said, I'm not satisfied. I want more feedback. I want more of this. How would you recommend that I get feedback on my writing? And he said, well, you have two options. One, you could submit your writing to contests as much as possible, and then you're going to be at the whim of basically whatever those judges' particular interests are.
Right.
Or you can form a writing group. And so I got together with Saul and a number of other people, and like he said, we just got the writing group started on our own, and we kind of set up our own ground rules or whatever, and it's taken off since.
Yeah.
So, Brenda, did you find, were you interested in a writing group from the very beginning as well?
Yes. The minute they talked about doing it, I thought, oh, that is so great, because as a writer, you spend so much time alone, and you only have your ideas. And so I think you're so limited. And when you get into a group, especially a creative group like this, they give you ideas, they tell you what's not believable in your story, they help you expand on ideas, they even draw things out of you that you didn't know were there, and you add them to it, and then you go home. Every time I go home after a critique, and I take my manuscript home that they've worked on, and each one of them gives me a hard copy, and it's line by line, and it's also suggestions of theme and overall feeling of the story, and every time I go back and rework that, and look at what they're telling me and asking me to do and try it, it's so much better. So I love it. I now, it's like a crutch. I don't think I could operate without it because they give me that confidence and they give me that ability to dig deeper.
So before you all get together to meet, do you send each other so many pages of what you're working on now so you can read it ahead of time?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, the deadline is a week before the meeting. So, okay. And that's another good thing about the group is that it gives you a deadline. You know, without deadlines, nothing gets done.
I know. You could never be finished.
So we all have at least a week to go over we discuss two manuscripts each meeting. So we have at least a week to go over the two manuscripts. And it takes a fair amount of time to go over it, to really put a lot of effort into it and to be concise, to be clear, to put it in a form where the author can read it and understand what you're having to say. And then when we go to the meeting, we kind of, each person in turn does a critique of the manuscript, and the author just sits and listens without offering any kind of rebuttal. And then at the end of the three critiques, then the author will say, well, this is what I was trying to accomplish. And we say, well, you did it or you didn't do it. But what Brenda said, you know, when you listen to a critique, sometimes you realize that the story is not the story you think you've written. It's a different story. And, you know, all of a sudden the light bulb goes on and you say, that's right. I mean, this isn't what I meant at all. I meant what they're saying. Right. And then you go back and you redo it. We've looked at one of Todd's stories maybe 10 times, and each time it's a different story. And each time, you know, it doesn't get tedious to read because each time it's a different story. And the fun part is seeing, oh, you know, that's what I told him to do, you know.
Yeah,
and so it's really, it's cool.
So I bet it's hard to have, to sit there while other people are critiquing your work and not say, but what I meant to say, until it's at the end.
It is, and the reason that it's difficult is because we know what we meant to say as writers, and if it's the readers don't understand, it's their fault. We know exactly what's going on. But it is hard to defend it, and that's something that I use in my class also is, you know, when you write something, every bit of meaning, every tone, every bit of atmosphere, mood, whatever you're trying to convey, all of that has to go on the page. And the difficulty with writing so much is that, and I'm not sure depending on which bit of statistics you look at, but roughly 10% of all communication is simply the words. 30% usually is tone of voice, and then the other 60% or so is body language. So all we have to do and work with as writers is just the words on the page, and that's it.
Right.
So we can't convey tone of voice necessarily. We can't do the smiley faces, no emoticons when you're doing a novel. unless you're doing one of those text novels they have in Japan, and that's a completely different situation. But that's why it's so difficult as a writer, because we know how this should feel. We know whether or not it should be funny. I remember writing a very intense scene, and I thought it was intense, and everyone in the writing group thought that it was just comical, one event after the other.
And you said, no, that's not it. Yeah.
So, but it's very difficult, and you can't defend yourself when people buy your book or whatever the situation is. You can't be there to tell them, here's what I meant by this paragraph. And that's the difficulty with writing, is we can't be with our readers time after time. It's just that representation we have in the book or on the page or the website or wherever.
Well, and I know Brenda and I had this conversation that I'm so impressed with the way that, Brenda, that you use dialogue, because I think that gives such a flavor to your characters. And I think that's such a, I mean, any writer that can do that, I think, is such a gift. But I thought I could really tell what your characters were doing because of the way that they talked and the rhythm of the way that they talked. Do you find that difficult to flesh out your character with the dialogue?
Well, you know, I don't think it's difficult when I'm writing a Southern dialogue, because I am Southern. But, and so it's easy for me to go back into those Alabama roots and write Southern. But it's interesting in our group, because we have Saul, who's from New York, and we have a really varied group. And so everyone's dialogue is so unique to them. And I think it's great. I think it's wonderful and interesting. I love dialogues. And
Brenda's dialogue is very strong. And she's got an incredible imagination. One of the things we have to do as a group is to rein Brenda in.
Saul is always telling me, it's time to wrap this book up. But I've got five plots still going.
Which is why you've got a trilogy, because you didn't want to wrap it up.
That's right.
And to kind of go along with the dialogue thing, I know that Elmore Leonard says something in his 10 Rules of Writing where he could tell a character just by the dialogue. That he didn't look at anything else. The main part of the story takes place in the dialogue. All the other stuff is just fluff or hoop-to-doodle. So that's why dialogue is so important, because like you said...
See, hoop-to-doodle, I like that word.
I'm writing that down, hoop-to-doodle.
It wasn't his word. I think he borrowed it from John Steinbeck. But dialogue is huge, because that's how we interact with each other.
Right.
I mean, we can do the body language and stuff too, but we do it through speech and the way we say things and how we talk about things, so...
And you know, so many of the literary writings today are dialogue driven.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it really is something that we had to work on at the beginning. We'd say, that doesn't sound quite right. I don't think anybody would say that, or it wouldn't be said like that. And so really it's kind of osmosed it through the years.
So how often do you all meet together as a writing group?
We try to meet once a month, but we don't usually, maybe 10 times a year.
Okay. And I know you were mentioning earlier that you get together once a year for an extended period and write something together.
Not every year, but we've done it twice now. And what we do is we write a screenplay, a collaborative screenplay, which is a lot of fun. And we get together usually someplace in the mountains. Last time we used Brenda's North Carolina home, the first time I had rented a summer home in the mountains. And we get together for 4 or 5 days. And before the first time, before we got there, we had all done emails back and forth to come up with some ideas, a screenplay, a theme, an ending, because paint yourself into a corner and then you don't know how to end the story. So we wanted to be sure we had an ending and kind of an idea for a beginning. And we met, and the first night we got there, we hashed out which of our stories we were going to do. And then we just wrote like crazy for 3 days. We used a screenplay format, a commercial screenplay format, so that the detail, the logistics of it was very easy. And we came away with kind of a screenplay, about 120 pages worth. And then through the year, we honed it, going back and forth. You know, we made it a lot better, and now we've got a full-fledged screenplay that we'd love to sell.
So did you find that doing this collaborative project together helped you as you then were working individually on each other's individual manuscripts?
I think it helped us socialize more, you know, become really closer to each other on a personal level, more than anything else. But it was a hoot. It was just a lot of fun. The social aspect at night, one person would cook a dinner, and we'd all, have a really nice dinner and talk about everything, not just the screenplay.
And that's where the dialogue really became critical in the screenplay.
That's exactly right. And the reason why the second time we took Brenda's Going Home is because the book has such intense dialogue, and the story is told in dialogue. And we just took whole sections from the book and put it into the screenplay, and it became very easy to do.
Well, and I know that in both of your novels, there's some conflict going on, but in Going Home, there's especially a lot of conflict between a daughter and her father, and them working through some really difficult things that were going on. So,
right. And the conflict is hard to write. It's like comedy. I think both those are very difficult to write because conflict in the South, we don't like too much conflict. And so it's difficult. And I think that working with each other is another thing that really helped work on hard parts of the book like that, like conflict.
So if our listeners were looking to become part of a writing group, would you recommend that they find people that are writing similar things that they're writing, or would you recommend that they find people that are writing different types of things than what they're writing?
I think different. What do you think?
Yeah, I think different too, but different in the sense of, different ideas, themes. I think it's best probably to try to limit the group to either poetry or nonfiction, although you could do nonfiction and fiction together. Short stories and novels would fit well together, that sort of thing.
But I think different genres is what I was referring to.
Right,
I think that's
romantic,
interesting.
Right, romantic,
we have a murder mystery. We have the fantasy.
Fantastical, right. Yeah.
So Todd, you do more fantasy type thing. Or you have
Western.
This current one, but one of the first stories I had published was actually sort of a story about a cowboy who was trying to get revenge on the man who had killed his wife, and so he traipsed through the desert trying to find the man who did it, and he still doesn't know exactly if that person is the one, and then he kills him at the end anyway. So, and the first novel that I wrote, which I have to go back and rewrite completely thanks to the writing group, which is not a problem because I love revisiting the characters and the situation. It's actually a murder mystery, so I have different things that I'm interested in because I'm just interested in way too many different things.
And so you've done more murder mystery type things?
Well, the book I'm working on now and that the writing group is critiquing is a murder mystery, Catch and Release. And the last segment is due November 13th, and they're all waiting to find out who the killer is.
But Saul has also done a book that I thought was really good, and a novel on what would you call it, hospital politics.
It's kind of a working title.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a great book.
Yes, it was.
And then Brenda, you're more...
I'm still trudging along in my three-book, trilogy of the Civil War.
And soon to be four.
Five. No, I don't think so. I'm thinking now I'll move on to World War II, I don't know why I'm stuck with wars. But no, I'm still working on that one. And, of course, my short stories are a variety of different subjects. But we like that. We started out with short stories, and we also started out Saul meeting twice a month. You remember way back when?
Yeah.
We're one thing about our group is we don't miss a meeting. If it's called, we're all there and we're on time, and we're kind of regimented that way. But at first we met twice a month, and now it's more after nearly 10 years or eight years. Now we meet once a month. But we have an agreement that we all four have to be there or we don't have the meeting. And so sometimes our schedules get
sometimes
in the way.
Life gets in the way.
That's right. That's right. So how long do you all meet when you actually physically get together?
2 hours. Roughly. 3 to 5 on a Sunday.
So you get a lot done in 2 hours if you go over two manuscripts and everybody critiques.
Well, a lot of background work has been done by each person. So Yeah, it's very efficient.
So it sounds like you actually put a lot of time into this group from the standpoint of not only the physical meetings, but the behind the scenes.
That's right.
Preparing for the meetings.
I would say that each manuscript gets about 6 to 8 hours of preparation before we get to the meeting.
We come with a 3-page, at least, usually a 3-page critique, hard copy of what we're talking about. So, you go home with your piece of manuscript that's been worked on and 9 pages of critique from the group, and it's a lot of just great stuff.
So what happens if you don't want to make the changes that the group well, you're is the recommending?
Author. You know, it's author. Your work, you're the author. But if three people mention the same thing, I think you
maybe
better look
at it.
Maybe it is a problem.
Yes.
So is everybody okay with not having their ideas accepted?
Oh,
is that hard to
course.
Say?
Of course. Oh, we always
yes,
think we were
course.
Right, but of course.
The author is the author.
Right? Yeah, that's right.
Stupid as he might be.
Wait a second, I resemble that remark.
Well, I think Saul said earlier in the conversation, I bet it does feel good to see your suggestion reflected in the author's work. That's
yeah.
got to
oh,
be cool.
Oh, it does,
yeah.
very much.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I know, Brenda, you mentioned earlier that sometimes your group draws things out of you that you hadn't even looked at or hadn't even considered.
Absolutely. Yeah, they do. And you'll go home and you'll think, my gosh, I did write that, but I didn't even know I meant that. You know, it's just it's wonderful. And then that leads you off into some other tangent, you know, you think of that mm-hmm. they remind you of. So it's just great.
And that's what's so helpful about having outside eyes, because we get married to what we're writing, and so we love every bit of it, and then we have to get rid of something because somebody else doesn't understand it, doesn't agree with it, whatever the situation is. But that's why I love having so many different readers.
Yeah, and that's one thing that's so interesting is it's so clear to you. You've read it aloud 100 mm-hmm. times. You think, I understand exactly what I mean. And the group reads it, and they all look at you with this questioning on their face, like, what are you talking about? So it is great to have that wall to bounce off of.
So, Brenda, can you think of an example of something that happened in one of your books that the group said, oh, no, this is not making sense?
Well, most of the time it would be a love scene that goes awry, and they will say, I just cannot see that happening, or especially this. I think that I'm really masculine, and I've got this great masculine conversation going, and Saul will say to me, no man on earth would think that way.
So it's nice to have your group a combination of genders, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
And age. We're not going to talk about that, but we do have
but you have a variety of
variety
ages.
Of ages
and, between the ages of 29 and 35.
Right. It's amazing that Saul was able to work in that 30 years of being a
yeah, I thought, gee, Saul, don't talk about 30 years of anything.
So if our listeners were looking to join a group, what would you say would be some of the red flags or some of the problems that you've heard other people have in their groups that folks need to be aware of or need to pay attention to?
Number one is, I don't think that you can be so sensitive. You know, you're going to go into a group, you're asking for their critique, you need to be able to hear it. I mean, I have been two times in the 8 years, maybe on the verge of tears listening to something, but now look at them, look at
look
me,
at
and they were
look
the
at the reaction, that's funny.
They were the cause of it, but I controlled it. I didn't throw my head down on the table and cry, but no, but you have to have a little bit of tough skin, but then you're going to have that when your book is out there, because some people are going to say, gosh, I love this, but that part I just didn't mm-hmm. buy, you know, so you have to have it, and I think that's probably one of the most important. What else do you think, Saul?
I think that the most important thing in a critique group is trust.
Yes.
You do need a thick skin, but you have to trust that the guy who or the woman who's giving you the critique is doing it to support you, to
absolutely.
Build you up, mm-hmm. not to tear you down.
Mm-hmm.
And what I recommend is in any critique group is if there's not a good fit, that you go into it and you say, okay, this is a trial. You know, you're joining a critique group for a trial run, and after two or three sessions, if it's not working out, you know, there's no fault on either side, it's just that it's not working out, and you know, personalities sometimes mm-hmm. mesh and sometimes they don't mesh, and you can't really predict ahead of time whose personality is going to mesh mm-hmm. with whose. So what I would say is, if it's not working out after two or three sessions at the most, just say, okay, thanks for giving me a chance, and then you go on to a different critique group. But that's the thing about it, is the trust. The mm-hmm. other thing is that people need to, I was in one critique group where there were like 10 people in the group and there was a leader, and each person would get like 2 minutes of critique. That doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You need to have a small group where you can really spend a lot of time and talk in depth about what the work is.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And I think another aspect of it is accountability, because we're all accountable to each other for our work. And our assumption, like Saul mentioned, is we assume when we come to a critique meeting that Brenda has done her 2 hours or so of work on my manuscript, that Saul's done his, or that I've done my 2 hours on each of theirs, depending on the situation. And I can go on and confess now, since most of the group is here, that there have been times when life had just gotten really in the way and just completely stressed for me, and so I couldn't put as much effort as I wanted to. I still gave a good critique, but there was much more that I felt like I had, what's the cliche, that I left on the field. There's so much more that I should have done, that I could have done, that I just, for whatever reason, whatever mindset I had, I did not do. But we've had some members in the past who, when we got the critiques, we looked at what they had written and thought, really? You spent 2 hours
and this is all you came up with?
And so that's a big part of it, too, is just kind of, I guess, the work ethic or just how serious people are going to take the actual work that they're presenting as far as the critiques and the writing. So that's a big part of it also, because if you have people who are not going to do the work, then, I mean, we all know it just doesn't work out with any situation.
Well, and I think it sounds like it's good advice to say you have to do a few sessions with mm-hmm. the people in the group to see if it's going to be the right fit or not. And if it's not, it's okay to say this is not right. not right for me.
Right.
Correct.
So, Brenda, I have a question for you. I know that you write under the pen name of Lorraine Tate, so I'd love for you to just tell our listeners why that is.
Well, when I was ready to publish my first book, I looked my name up, I Googled it, and there were 30 in the state of Georgia, Brenda Ledfords, and more in North Carolina, and two of them were writers. So I thought, well, this won't work. So I used my daughter, my first daughter, and my son's name, which I liked. Of course, I picked those names, Lorraine Tate. And I used that
your
name.
Your first characters.
Right. I Googled that and found an exotic dancer, and I thought, well,
I don't mind if they think that's me.
So there's the author, Lorraine Tate, and there's the exotic dancer.
That's right.
People get them mixed up, that's all right.
That's right. That's all right.
Sells more books.
That's right. So Brenda, how can our listeners today get in touch with you and find out and buy your books? How can they get your books?
Okay, they can get them from Amazon, and they're on all the little, they're on, what are these called?
Pages, sites, links.
Technical things.
E-readers.
E-readers.
Oh, okay. like Kindle and Nook.
Now I've given my age away. Oh, darn. Anyway,
they can contact me at LorraineTate10@AOL.com.
That's great. And Saul, how can folks reach you?
Well, I don't have I'm not quite as socially.
He hasn't found that name yet.
Social media. I'm not quite up to par with Brenda yet on the social media.
You're still the underground author.
Right.
So how soon do you think your nonfiction book is going to be out?
Well, we're contacting agents, and you know that's a big problem in the publishing industry is how to get published by the usual route, and then there are other routes that one can take. So we'll see. We haven't reached that hurdle quite yet.
So have you finished the writing part of it?
Almost.
Excellent. So Todd, what about you? Are you underground, or can people find you?
People can find me in a couple of different ways. I'm on Facebook. Facebook.com/ToddCampbellNG. And if people want to, they can also go to the North Georgia College and State University website, which is northgeorgia.edu, and just Google Todd Campbell. I should be the only Todd Campbell on campus.
All right. Unless they brought somebody else in.
That I didn't know about,
that
yes.
You didn't know about. So thank you all so much for being with me today. This was a really interesting conversation, and I think that our listeners are going to get a lot of good ideas from it.
I hope so.
Talked about the power of the writing group. So I think that was really interesting. So we're getting close to the end of our show, and our clock is on us. We welcome your comments and suggestions about content and about our guests. If you would like to recommend a guest or would like to be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. You can send us an email, whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Thank you, Stone, for co-hosting with me today. And thanks to our guests.
Thank you for having us.
Brenda Ledford, a.k.a. Lorraine Tate.
Yeah, thank you.
And Saul Adler and Todd Campbell. Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. Learn more about Right Choice Services at rightchoiceservices.com. I hope that you'll join us next week. Tell your friends about the show. In fact, how about sending them an email right now to invite them to listen live or download some of our previous shows. Listen to Right Here, Right Now live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m., at righthererightnow.businessradiox.com, or you can download the MP3 version of all the interviews on Right Here, Right Now, on the Right Here, Right Now website. I am guest host Vanessa Lowry. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business. Right Here, Right Now.